Hey guys, welcome to today's episode. Today's probably going to be a little bit longer because I'm going to actually talk to you about all the cool ways, all the cool things my day job taught me about e-commerce and running a business and drop shipping and all this stuff. So I worked as a salesman at a warehouse, a distribution company in Van Nuys, California, which is just in the valley north of Los Angeles. And this company sold security hardware and everything related to that. It's a niche. Security hardware niche is a very complicated niche with lots of different SKU numbers and lots of different colors and lots of different codes for all sorts of stuff. And when I first started working there, I actually didn't work as a salesman. I worked in the warehouse. It was around 2008, in the spring of 2008, and I answered a Craigslist job posting about a warehouse position. And I thought that was perfect for me because I didn't really have tons of sales experience or anything like that, and I needed something that was simple and not retail. You know, I wanted to learn more how a distribution business worked too, and a warehouse job kind of seemed perfect for me. So I answered the posting, I went in for a job interview, and then it worked out really well. The guys liked me, and I was all really excited and said the right things and had a good attitude. And so out of, 50 to 100 applicants, they actually hired me and one other guy. I started at $10 an hour, which was on the low end of what they paid people, and that was still better than the minimum wage. I think it was right around $8 back then in Los Angeles County, in California. So it worked out really well. I was super happy about that. When I first started there, I was learning how the warehouse worked, and of course, like I said, the niche is very complicated, so the part numbers and the nomenclature of the part numbers is very, very complicated, so they had to really be careful with the organization of their warehouse. And what it was a bunch of bins, mostly, for products that fit inside of bins, and the bins would have a label on them, which would be the 3-digit vendor code, and they would have the manufacturer part number, and then the name of the product underneath that, so that you could double check that it's the right product. So what I learned first was how to pick products from the warehouse shelves and bring them over to the packing area. So I had to match up whatever was on the order slip to the product that was in the bin. And I had to double check that the product that was in the bin was actually the product that was labeled on the bin by checking the box of it and checking the part number on the box, which of course is never exactly how it's supposed to be. There's so many different versions of the way manufacturers pack their products and package them and label them and stuff like that, that half the time it wouldn't even make sense. And since the part numbers are so complicated, I really had to learn, what the color codes meant and how they corresponded to different words and stuff like that. So it was very complicated in the beginning, and it was tough, but I got it pretty quickly, and I worked really hard and diligently learning the nomenclature and all the different part numbers. And I advanced pretty quickly. I went from picking to the packing process. So I would go out and pick the products on the shelves, then I would drop them onto the packing line, and then someone else would be there packing, kind of like a factory, kind of an assembly line sort of thing. And so I started doing the packing, and they showed us how to do it. It's pretty simple. You just look at the products that are in the little basket. We would have these, you go to a grocery store and you have those little hand baskets. We would use the same ones to go pick the products off the shelves. So you look at that, and I would see, that would fit inside of this size box or whatever. And the first thing I would be trained to do is go and see if there's a recycled box I could use. If not, then I'll use a brand new box because it costs less if you recycle them, obviously. And and I'd go ahead and put the products in and put the... I'd have to double check on the order form with the products and make sure that they're the correct products. Again, it was kind of like a double checking process right there. And then I put the packaging stuff in, tape the box up, and tape the package to it. And I'd actually do a little initial on it. I'd also initial the picking. So the picker initials the slip, and then the packer initials the slip. And then he moves the box down the other line to the shipping department, which is, just the computer and at the end of that line. And I did that for a long time, probably a few months. And once I got the really good hang of that and I started understanding everything really good, I started kind of pushing my way into the shipping department. They didn't ask me to get in there. I just wanted to because I knew that the only way I was going to advance in that company and learn new stuff was by just taking on new, tasks during the day. And I was just really excited about it. I knew that, I really wanted to learn how business worked and how different parts of it worked. And it was just fun for me to learn new things and stuff like that. And I didn't want to be stuck in a job because being stuck in a job sucks ass. And it just isn't a way to live life. And, that was more exciting for me, learning new things. So I did that. They had a really old system set up, I remember. They would have a separate system for invoice than they did for the shipping labels. So they use UPS World Ship most of the time, and we would go down the line, and they would look at the invoice and put the box on a scale and then weigh it out. And if it was, you know, 5, 6 pounds, whatever, they typed that into the shipping invoice, and then they'd get the quoted shipping amount from the invoice, and they'd print out the label and slap it on the box. And then with that quoted amount, they would go ahead and create the invoice for the order. And their original ordering system back then was really old. It was almost like based on an MS-DOS program or something. It was just text on a screen. And it must have been like one of the original programs or something that they had. And I think they opened the business back in the 90s or something, maybe 80s, or I think it was even the 70s. It was a really long time ago that they had it in Salt Lake City, Utah, when they first opened the company. And the branch I was working at in Los Angeles was one of their newest branches. So, but yeah, and then they would invoice it, and they would put in the shipping amount. They would choose the freight type, you know, they would choose different freight types, FOB, or, you know, I don't even know all the different types there are. I haven't worked a whole lot with freight recently since then, but back then, you know, it would mostly be either if it was over a $100 order, the shipping was free, and if it was under, then they would charge shipping to the customer, depending on the account. Some accounts they wouldn't charge the shipping to, just because they had such a long-term relationship with and stuff like that, so the manager was able to do that custom for that account. But most accounts we would charge shipping if it was under $100 on the order. And yeah, and then that was it. We'd put the invoice out, put it in a little packing slip thing, and tape that to the box, and then put it on the little pile to be picked up at the end of the day. So that was the whole process. It went from picking to packing to shipping, invoicing, and then would go out the door. So that was that, and we did that for a long time, and I started getting into the invoicing and stuff like that, and I learned how to correct mistakes and how to, you know, issue refunds and stuff like that. And it was a pretty good process, and we learned how to use it and stuff like that. We even learned how to handle freight orders. So one of the products that company did was safes, and safes can be pretty big, gun safes and you know, all sorts of different types of safes, fire safes. So most of the safes were too big to be put in a box and ship out. I would say like 99% of them were. So they would have a little forklift there, and a 3-story high structure in one of the warehouses where they would hold the safes. And so they would stock them, of course, most of them. And then people would order them, and we'd have to bring the safe down, invoice the safe, call the freight company, and create a bill of lading, and then the freight company would come pick up the safe, and we'd provide them the paperwork, and then they would take the safe into their freight truck and deliver the safe to the customer. So it was a pretty interesting process, a lot of forklift driving. I had to take a forklift class in order to get certified to drive the thing, and that was interesting, and yeah, it was a good time doing it. It was good, but I kind of knew that that wasn't really for me. I was really good at solving problems, and you know, what that company did a lot was they would start people in the warehouse and let them learn the systems and procedures and stuff that the warehouse deals with every day, and that way you get to kind of feel the products and see the products and what they look like up close. And then when people got really good at it and they showed an inclination for solving problems, they would move them up into sales. And that's exactly what I started doing. So this was about a year into my stint there, a year and a half or so, and all of a sudden I got the question, you know, hey Trevor, we're hiring some new people for the warehouse, and we'd like to move you up to sales. Would you be interested in taking a position at the front counter? And I was kind of scared at first, but of course I said yes. And I, you know, I knew eventually I would be able to get some sort of a pay raise, of course, with that. So there was no pay raise right away, but I knew that eventually that one would come, and it did. Eventually, about 6 months later, I did get a pay raise from $10 to $12, so it was really good. But yeah, I started at the front counter, and I started by just, you know, solving people's problems, interpreting what people would tell me that they thought they needed, and then I would figure out, according to our catalog, and according to their problem that they needed to solve, that what their customers actually needed. So we didn't work directly with the public. The company was a wholesale to the trade only, which means people had to be actually in the locksmith trade. You couldn't be like a big box store and buy from that company. You had to actually be, you know, a locksmith or somebody, a security installer, somebody in the trade that would actually, you know, sell to an end consumer, because, you know, they wanted to protect their dealer base from big, you know, big box stores or online dealers that would take over. So, you know, I just started solving problems. So, like, one of the things, you know, would be like the back set of a door lock, and, you know, people don't really know that, you know, commercial doors are thicker doors and bigger doors. They need a 2 3/4 inch back set, which is the distance between the latch and the center of the lock. And you know, residential doors take a 2 3/8 inch back set, and it's a small difference, but once you get there to install the lock, if it's wrong, then it's wrong and the lock won't fit. So I had to help these guys out with stuff like that, and I had to help them out with keyways and understanding keyways and finding replacement locks for like really ornate locks and things like that. And my company worked with a lot of different suppliers and brands, specifically like manufacturers of products, and I have to do a lot of different custom orders for them and stuff like that. And I really did get into solution selling. Solution selling, of course, is where you focus on providing a solution for the customer, and then you can charge more because you provided that solution. So that was one of my biggest things. I used to call the suppliers and get quotes and go back to the customer and then tell them the quote and tell them the lead time, and they would agree and tell their customer, and then I would have to follow up with the supplier about a week or two later and make sure everything's on track and the order's, you know, good, and make sure the price is still good and everything, and then they would ship out and we would receive it 2 or 3 weeks later usually, process it, and then call the customer and then tell them it's in stock and ready to be picked up, and they would come out and they would call their customer and tell them it's ready, and they would set a date and they would come out and pick up the product, pay for it, and you know, they would probably hopefully already gotten paid from their customer, but maybe not, and they would go out and do the work, and if they hadn't got paid, they'd get paid already, and then that was that. So it was a pretty smooth process, and it just required a lot of, you know, just me making sure that everything was done correctly. And it was tough because being at the front counter, I would deal with a lot of walk-in traffic, and I would have to be taking phone calls, so there's a lot of disorganization along the way, and you know, our sales numbers kind of decreased because a lot of times the phone calls wouldn't be getting answered because we'd be talking to somebody right there in person, and it's really rude to be talking to somebody right in front of you and then, you know, have to answer the phone right in front of them. So what the management did was they actually created two separate selling environments, one just for taking phone calls and one just for dealing with front counter sales. And that was interesting because we realized that, you know, when you focus on taking those phone calls and, you know, we focus on helping the people who place orders on the website, which they did have a wholesale portal for the dealers, and people would place orders on the website, is much easier than having to sit on hold. And we focus on providing solutions for those people that they wouldn't go to the competition because there was a big competitor in that same city that they can get stuff overnighted from. And so, it, you know, with us being so service-oriented, we would, you know, provide the best solution for them, quickest service, make it easy, make everything fast, on time, efficient, and good price and low price, and of course they would buy from us. So I started learning all these different things about, you know, sales tactics and unique selling proposition and how to gain customers over the competition and stuff like that, just through the management and their handling of stuff, you know, and me doing solution selling and kind of going along with their flow and figuring things out. So it was really interesting. The more I got into it, I actually got a back office cubicle, and I started doing the phone sales because I was really good at them. I was as good as, you know, solving problems over the phone as I was in the front counter, and I was great at closing sales and upselling for big clients and big customers. So I started doing that kind of work as well. I started creating and handling special orders and back orders, which was really important for those people because over the phone, if they have a custom order that they need done, you know, it's a bit more important usually than somebody who comes into the front counter. It's a bigger job usually. So I started handling custom orders that were in, you know, the, you know, $5,000, $10,000 range as far as order value goes. And those are big orders. So they required more, you know, intense quote taking processes. And I started doing more with electronic security outside of just the mechanical security. So magnetic locks, electronic locking systems, entire systems, like including the power supply, including the lock, including the switches, including the even the camera systems included in that. So there's a lot that had to go into building a system out for people, and I had to figure out how to build systems for people that would, you know, lock up an entire facility. So and not only lock up a facility, but also keep track of the people going in and out of that facility. Stuff like that's called electronic access control. And it was control because they would know who's going in and going out at any certain time, and it could control who would have access to the building at any certain time. So it's a really interesting industry. It's very complicated systems and very difficult to sell, very, very technical stuff. And, you know, if you're going to sell it, you're probably going to end up being a dealer that's working very closely with the end consumer. And these end consumers are big institutions, big commercial buildings, big schools, and, you know, other things like that. So I used to do a lot of different types of customers. It wasn't just the big facilities. It was also, it was big facilities sometimes. And it was people that were in charge of running those facilities that I worked with. So just maybe like one person, you know. And I started doing something called retail arbitrage, where if I couldn't find a solution to someone's problem, like if, for instance, our company didn't have a connection with a certain supplier that person wanted, like, hey, I want this brand and this product, can you get me a price on it? Oh, I don't have an account with them, you know, the other salesman would just be like, oh, sorry, I can't. And I would look at that like, are you kidding me? Like, come on, you can get him a price, you know, just go to another retailer who has an account and you know, quote it up 20-30% or whatever, you know. And so I did that, and I actually used Amazon.com a lot, and I would go there, I had an account with them, and I would look up, you know, what their prices are, because they usually have pretty low prices. And basically look at what other retailers are offering it for. And I would take that price and, you know, put a profit of 20-30%, maybe up to 40% sometimes, if I thought, you know, it's a low enough price and they wouldn't mind the difference. Because they're really working with us because it's convenient. It's one account, one person to call, and they get the price, and that's just their day job. They don't care. It's not their business. It's a school system, so they're paying money with taxpayer dollars. And, you know, if anything, that taxpayer dollar is going to support a business and someone's life like mine, you know? So I used to do that, and actually works really well. And I was supporting a service, even though I was charging more money than they could have gotten somewhere else. If they would have done more research themselves, they're paying me for that. And, you know, there's plenty of other companies that do that, and like travel agencies and stuff like that, that offer that kind of service where you can go and do the research yourself and book it direct. But it's such a pain in the ass to do that, you know, you would rather just go and have your own agent do the work for you and pay them a little bit more money to do it. So I was taking on that role as well, and I was using my own Amazon.com account to buy the products and sell it, and then the company would take the money in and they'd have to reimburse me for the products, which was cool because I would get cash back rewards for using my credit card to buy those products. So I used to take advantage of those as well. So before I moved into sales, I actually took on a role in the warehouses a little more than just picking, packing, and shipping. I was actually doing receiving and returns, which, you know, is a whole nother part of the warehouse functions that, you know, you don't really think about when you're buying something online. But like with every warehouse company, like Amazon or whatever, they always have to have multiple functions, and one of them is taking in products and the other is pushing out products, right? So I used to actually handle their receiving and returns in the warehouse, and that was a big function. I would have to every day there would be a bunch of pallets of products that would come in, and they'd be filled with stock for the warehouse, and they'd be filled with special orders. So the way the purchasing department handled the ordering was that they would order big bulk amounts of stock from the brands like Master Lock or, you know, like Simplex and stuff like that. These big, Ilco, these big lock brands. And they would mix in special orders with stock orders so that they could get the best pricing on stuff and get the best deals. So they would be very, very conscious about that. And they would make it so that those custom orders would sometimes actually cost us less, and so the profit would be more on them in the long run. So it was really good and really smart of them to do that. Now, as a receiver, I had to make sure that I would get all the packing slips correct, and then I would have to look through the packing slips, enter them into the system, make sure that we received the correct products from them. So I'd check the packing slip to the product, and then I'd check the packing slip in. I would scan the packing slip and send it all in one package to the receiver who worked in Salt Lake City. The management for Los Angeles, the manager was actually in Salt Lake City, and I would send it to them, and they would handle that. So it was a really interesting process, and it worked pretty smoothly. All I had to do was just check and make sure the merchandise received was correct, and then send it over to them, and they would make sure everything was invoiced correctly on their end, and then they would check it into the system, and then it was my job to either have someone put it away or put it away myself to the shelves. So that was an interesting process, and I learned a lot about receiving and all that in that process as well. And then the next thing I did was handling the returns, which meant if somebody brought something back to the company, I'd have to see whether it was returned because of a defect. If it was, then I would have to put it into a list and send it to the returns department in Salt Lake City. They would send it to the manufacturer, and then they would get back to me and let me know if I would just dump the product, throw it in a trash bin, or if I would actually be able to send it back for a refund. And a lot of times these manufacturers are so big that they don't even want products to be sent back to them. They'll just say, hey, just throw it away. It's not worth the time and effort. It's not worth the packing, you know, a free packing slip to send it back. So I would just do that. And I did a little bit of eBay on the side to make a little bit of extra money, because a lot of these products that got thrown away were actually fairly good products in great condition. So I was able to take those products and sell them on eBay, because the management didn't want anybody doing anything with those products. They didn't want them being sold or anything. They just wanted to go in the trash bin. So sometimes I would even throw them in the trash bin just so they would see me throwing them in the trash bin, and then come back after I was off hours, after I was clocked out, and pick them out of the trash bin just like I was dumpster diving, and take them home and make sure that they were good and put an eBay listing up and actually sell it for, you know, quite a bit of money. Sometimes I get, you know, $100-$200 per product, and, you know, it was products that were, you know, like the customer bought it back for whatever reason. Maybe they claimed it was defective and it wasn't, or it was defective, but I just put it on there, hey, this product, you know, is a return. It's been used, and it was claimed it was defective. Maybe you can use it for parts, and people would actually buy it. So you just never know. You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and I would just take chances. that because I wasn't getting paid that much. You know, I was getting paid a couple thousand bucks a month. And in Los Angeles, that is not enough to live on by any means. And yeah, so I had to, you know, have a side hustle to pay for my skateboarding and paid for, you know, taking my girlfriend out and stuff like that. But that worked out really well. When I was in sales, that same sort of stuff came back to help me too, because then I would understand if someone brought something back at the sales counter, it doesn't necessarily mean it's actually defective if they think it was defective. So I would spend more time trying to diagnose the situation and make sure that the product was actually defective or if it actually worked still. And a lot of the time the product did work, they just didn't know how to use it. And that was interesting to me. So I got to help people a lot there. And in dealing with that, I really learned people skills and how to learn how to deal with upset customers, which, you know, with e-commerce now, we have to learn how to do that because it's a lot of email and phone support and people are upset about, you know, something happening here or there. They just don't know how to use the product or whatever, how to set it up. So, you know, we have to be the person that says, no, it's not defective. This is just, you know, it's how to set it up. Unfortunately, the person isn't there, you know, in person to talk to, but that's a better thing. I kind of like that because they can't bother you. You know, it's email or phone only. So that's kind of cool. So, one of the most important things I learned at my day job that I took to e-commerce later was how to close sales and negotiation tactics for getting more for your money. And it's basically simply put, stacking your value. So you have to make sure that you're telling that customer if they want a better price, it's probably because they're not seeing the value is equal to that price. So you got to reinstate the values that you're offering to that person. And it's your unique value proposition. The same value you state on your about page, that's the value you have to state in every single sale and every single product page. So what I do now is every single product page, I put my unique value proposition into that product page. And it's a big deal because, yeah, that stuff does help raise your perceived value and it does get you sales. It does, you know, like get you sales that are at the normal price instead of people using the coupon codes and stuff like that. So definitely value stacking and closing sales by just doing trial closes like, you know, hey, are you ready to buy and do you want to get it right away? Would you like to pay with your Visa, you know, or American Express or, you know, all these different trial closes just to get yes, 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 yes. Because you just want to get people saying yes and then you can close them like, okay, let's go ahead and get this shipped out to you. And then they'll be like, yeah, so that's how you do it. So I learned how to close sales and that really came in handy with e-commerce because I would be able to put that into my copywriting, all these different questions and answers and sale closes. And it really does help close sales online. All right. And then, you know, after I learned all these different things, I started talking to some of the customers that wanted to start online businesses. And they were thinking, you know, we could use your company that you work for as our distribution center to drop ship directly to our customers. And I thought, you know, what is this? What are you talking about? Drop shipping stuff. And I thought, you know, that's not a bad idea. You know, we could work together. And I was thinking about partnering with a guy one time, but he was too distracted. He had too much going on. So it never worked out. And honestly, I didn't really want to get into lock drop shipping because the industry is just too complicated. There's so many different products and one little, you know, mistake is the wrong product and the person wants to return it. If you don't have a good return policy and a way to process returns, that person's going to be really upset. And if you have to charge restocking fees and stuff to make your money, then the person's going to be even more upset. So the lock industry is just not a simple industry and it's not one I wanted to get into as a business. So I found a different niche, but I did learn how it works. So, you know, starting a business as a retail store, as an online retailer only, an online storefront, you can utilize the services of a distributor like I used to work for, and they'll actually drop ship directly to customers without the invoice on it, without even their name on the package. So they think it came directly from you as the online retailer. And that customer will get the package, they'll be perfectly happy with it. So the one thing I did learn eventually though, is that you can't use distributors for drop shipping because distributors take a chunk. As a drop ship only online retailer, you have to work directly with brands that will drop ship for you. Because brands, the people that import the products from China, those are the only ones that can give you the best margins, the 20 or 30% you need to be successful online and make a profitable business, right? And be able to run paid ads and pay more to acquire customers. So that's important. You have to learn how, you know, the business model works the best and then work in that direction only and not work distributors, work with brands only. So I really did understand that after a while and it worked out. And so those are all the things that, you know, my day job really did teach me how to do e-commerce dropshipping in the sense that I was learning it from the inside out. I was learning about, you know, how all these industries work, how fulfillment works and how the supply chain works from the inside out. And it was really a great experience. I got paid along the way, got to meet a lot of good people along the way, got to learn all about an industry along the way. Unfortunately, it wasn't anything that I was super passionate about, but I was smart enough to grasp it and understand it all, and I was able to sell it. So it's an amazing thing, you know, what you can do as a human being. Even if you aren't passionate about something, you can still sell it. just because you simply understand the basics behind it. I was actually getting myself into certain trade shows, and I was, you know, representing my company to big brands and stuff like that. And it was really incredible what I was able to get myself into without even being that advanced skills in electronics. I was able to be pretty much the electronic access control person for my branch, the representative there, because I just understood the basics. And that's really all you need to know in life is the basics. You can pretend like a super advanced person by just knowing the basics and get really far. Eventually, you do want to definitely push in the direction of learning all the advanced stuff if you're going to spend years and years in the same industry. But I knew that I was on the out, that I wanted to start my own company and in a different niche. And I actually was able to start it while I was working there. So I started taking business classes at night, and I learned, you know, more about business. And then I was able to start my own internet business by signing up with eBay and with eCreator, which is eBay Alternative, and create an e-commerce store, and actually getting traffic to those listings through Google AdWords, and then selling those products and fulfilling the orders, having my supplier fulfill them for me. So it was really good. And yeah, it started just by me opening my eyes and opening my mind and opening my heart to different things in life that I could be doing instead of just wasting my time watching skate videos all day like I had done the prior, you know, half decade. I was now spending my time creating product listings and, you know, finding new traffic sources and creating content. So I was working in the mornings, I was working in the evenings, I was working on my lunch break, I was working on my 15-minute breaks at work, I was working in between breaks at college, I was working during college class. I mean, it was just literally like putting the site together in this business, and a lot of it was shooting in the dark, but I learned a lot, and it was pretty awesome, and it was totally, totally worth it, because now I'm able to spend every day doing whatever I want, traveling the world. Whereas back then, if I was going to travel the world, I'd probably be completely broke and be scrambling to find money all the time by doing odd jobs. And that's just not something I like to do. I like to build businesses and have cash flowing and use credit cards to buy stuff. And it's a nice, easy life. We always have a place to stay that's comfortable. I can have a family and we can travel and do cool stuff. And I'm an entrepreneur at heart, so I like to, you know, build projects and build little businesses here and there. And then building e-commerce paradise right now so I can help other entrepreneurs to build their businesses as well. Because I love being a teacher. That's one of the biggest passions I have in life, and it's to teach you guys to build businesses, can, you know, and get feedback and stuff, and hear that people are actually finding success with it is one of the most fulfilling things in my life. So I really like it, and I hope you guys learned something from this. And if you're working a day job right now, definitely don't look at it like you're not going to be able to learn anything from it, because you definitely can. So learn everything you can, work to learn. If you haven't read Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad book yet, then definitely hop on that, because that's where he talks a lot about working to learn. And it's really important that you grasp that concept, because the more you learn while you work, the better you are able to apply that into a future business of your own and find true freedom that way. All right, guys. Well, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and join our free Facebook group, and we'll see you out there. Take care.